Hey there, Mohawk Mafia listeners. Thanks for tuning into the bonus episode from our Patreon archive. If you want to hear the latest and greatest content, head over to patreon.com/Milwaukee Mafia to join the Patreon today. Catch you on the other side.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey, welcome back to Milwaukee Mafia Patreon. I'm Eric Waltikens.
I'm Gavin Schmidt.
Gavin, are you ready for the big question of the day?
I'm ready. I'm on this this bottom half of this J&B, and I'm feeling pretty good.
I'm really sorry to tell you this, but it's a two-parter.
It's okay.
You can handle it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right, so the first part of the question is, Wyatt asks, was the Milwaukee Mafia involved in narcotics?
All right. Well, hello, Wyatt. I don't know if Wyatt's a listener or not, but I know who Wyatt is, and Wyatt's a pretty cool guy. All right. So step back just for a moment and put some definitions on this. There's two ways to define narcotics. There's a very specific way, which is like anything made from like opium, heroin, you know, that sort of thing. Anything made from like the poppy plant is a narcotic. Because like literally narcotic, like the word means like, you know, something that's like a downer, it puts you to sleep, like someone with narcolepsy, narco. So that's like, strictly speaking, if somebody's dealing in narcotics, they're dealing in heroin or morphine. We've gotten kind of loosey-goosey about that. And now if someone's like dealing in narcotics, they might be dealing in cocaine. Might say, oh, they got to deal in narcotics. Whereas cocaine would be the exact opposite of what a narcotic would be. So the question might vary a little bit depending on how we define it. But I just want to be very clear on that. Sometimes when I use the word narcotics, I'm referring to like any hard drugs. Strictly speaking, that's not accurate. But I think we're not that picky about it anymore.
Yeah.
It's not just me. Like, I think that's how people use the word.
I think that's what the word has become.
Yeah. So more or less. Just wanted to be clear about that. So what the question is, was Milwaukee involved in it?
Yeah. Okay. Was the Milwaukee Mafia involved in it?
Okay. And the weird thing about that is I don't think so. Now, there's this myth that the Mafia didn't get involved in narcotics. I think this was partially perpetuated by like the Godfather movies, but there was this idea that like, we don't do that. That's dirty. We don't want to get mixed up in it. Like gambling, fine. You know, extortion, fine. But we don't want to get people, you know, turned into junkies. We don't want any of that stuff. But like, that's not realistic. You can look at any of the major mafia families and find incredible exceptions to this. Lucky Luciano, one of the most famous mobsters of all time, dealt in narcotics. So like, it's clearly not accurate. But in Milwaukee, strangely enough, it seems to be true. And there's like no real clear record that I've been able to find of anybody being ever caught with heroin, morphine, anything like that. We do start seeing cocaine when the 1980s come around. But up to that point, pretty much nothing. And it's really weird. Like even marijuana, which is like, you know, relatively minor, like wouldn't even call that narcotics. There's one guy who is dealing in it, and he tells an informant who tells the FBI that he's even scared of that because he doesn't want Frank Balestrieri, the mob boss, finding out that he's doing it because he's going to get beat or something. Like even that he's scared of, which is so contrary to New York and Chicago and everywhere else. Apparently in Milwaukee, it was a fairly strict rule that you do not deal in drugs with people. It's just not okay. So I would love to find that to be false. I would love to find that to be an exception, that people are dealing in heroin and morphine and whatever, and just somehow I've missed it all this time. Because it's not like there wasn't heroin and morphine in Milwaukee. Obviously there was. But you know, who was selling it? If it wasn't the mob, who was selling it? I don't know, because I don't have any record of that happening.
So this is this is going to show my dumb sure. side of me.
Sure, go
so
for it.
So when did narcotics really become a thing? Do you know that?
I don't know about that exactly. I can tell you there are some periods where it became more popular. And like originally when it got big the first time, would have been like just after the Civil War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. I know you weren't expecting it that far back.
No, I wasn't. I was not at all expecting it to go that far back.
But like, so in the Civil War, people would get injured. They'd have to have like limbs amputated and stuff like that. Medicine wasn't very good. So what they would do is they'd amputate you or they'd do whatever. And then they'd send you home with like morphine. And they'd be like, here you go. Have fun. Yeah, because you're going to be in pain for the rest of your life. So just take some morphine. And that was kind of how it worked. And then up to the end of the 1800s, none of this stuff was illegal in the 1800s. So you could go to like your local drugstore and you could buy morphine. Heroin was available like in aspirin form. Cocaine was available in certain forms. As I'm sure a lot of people know, cocaine used to be in Coca-Cola. So up to the late 1800s, like this stuff was fairly unregulated. And people who had pain issues just went to the drugstore and got some stuff. After the late 1800s, early 1900s, the government really cracked down on that. And they're like, we can't have people going around like this. Like if you're in pain and you got to go to the doctor and the doctor gives you morphine or whatever, you know, today it would be like Oxycontin or whatever. That's fine. I mean, but you can't have guys going out to the drugstore and buying up as much as they want.
Yeah.
Not okay. So they really cracked down on it. But it did have sort of peaks and valleys over the years. A lot of times it did kind of tie in with the war years. Morphine picked up really big again in the 50s because a lot of guys who had been in World War II came back and they ended up getting hooked on it. It's really like the same old story again and again. Like today, you know, heroin is kind of heavily frowned upon. You know, you say, oh, use heroin. That's terrible. But as you and I both know, and we're not going to name any names, but as you and I both know, it's very easy to get hooked on pain pills.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it starts out not being like a bad thing, but it becomes a bad thing. So this, it's been an ongoing thing pretty much forever, where you get people who go into this because a lot of times at first they need it, and then they become hooked. And when the doctor cuts them off, then they got to go somewhere else. So,
gotcha.
So yes, no, I mean, this has been an ongoing thing for well over 100 years.
So then the second question I would have for this is, I believe we talked about this a lot with prostitution.
Okay.
Because the mafia kind of frowns upon prostitution. But you
generally,
had found,
yes.
Yeah, you had found instances where they were willing to look the other way and take their cut. So they weren't like directly related to the prostitution, but somehow were siphoning money off of it.
Right.
Have you ever looked into it to see if the mafia could have been involved with narcotics in a similar way where they're not necessarily dealing them, but they're somehow connected into it in drawing money from it?
I don't have a record of that. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all, but I don't have a record of that. And
have you ever looked into it? Like, is this something you've
specifically no, but kind of the way that I do the research, and I think I've been pretty clear about this, is I kind of just fall down these rabbit holes where I get the police reports or the FBI reports, and they lead me to more reports. And I go down that path. And I haven't seen that in any of these reports.
So you've never seen like a strong connection between show up where a mafia member is really connected to a known narcotic dealer or anything
no,
like that?
No, which is really weird. I mean, because even if they weren't strongly connected, you'd think they might run in the same circles, hang out at the same places. But like it never seems to come up. Like I have basically zero, like almost no records whatsoever about heroin trafficking in Milwaukee, which again, it's not that it didn't happen. I guarantee you that's not the reason. So it just, for whatever, whatever reason it is, it doesn't overlap with these guys, and I don't know. And someday maybe I'll make that connection. And one reason maybe it hasn't come up is I do rely so heavily on the police and the FBI and less so on the DEA or, you know, the old version of the DEA, which was the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, the FBN. So, you know, maybe through those records, it would suddenly like, oh, here's some links. But even there, now here's kind of a funny thing there. The FBN had this dossier, this collection of documents, and it's published today. You can buy it in a book, and the book is just called Mafia. And it's hundreds of, I don't really know how to describe it. They're kind of like rap sheets, but they're not really rap sheets. Of these guys, and they got the mugshot, their name, their birth date, their known hangout places, and this and that, of all these guys that the Federal Bureau of Narcotics was looking into. And the book is divided up by states. That's how it's organized. It's not alphabetical by name, it's divided up by state. And the weirdest thing is, if as my memory serves me, there's only one Wisconsin guy in the book, and he's in like the northern part, like in the upper Michigan part of the state. So it's not even a Milwaukee guy. So of all these hundreds of known mafia members dealing in heroin, no Milwaukee guy made that book.
That is so interesting.
Now, does that mean there weren't any? I don't know. But nobody was big enough to make it into this collection.
Is it possible that narcotics just weren't a big thing in Milwaukee?
It's possible.
Okay.
I find that really hard to believe.
I do too, because that just doesn't make sense. Because it's one of those things that the problem just seems to exist.
Yeah, everywhere. I can't picture a place, especially a major city, that doesn't have heroin trafficking. That makes no sense.
Yeah. It's an interesting anomaly, though.
Yeah.
It really is. And it almost, like, well, so you said that Chicago was connected to it.
Sure.
Okay. Do you have a time frame where they were into that?
I mean, pretty much whenever, really.
So you could see it all the way back to like the 20s and up to the 80s or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I couldn't give you exact years, but it's not like there was a time where it really wasn't a thing. I'd say it was probably more common like in the 40s and 50s, but that's just, that could be just how the records appear. I'm not sure.
Because it just, one of the things that pops to my head is that Frank Balistrieri was mob boss for quite some time,
yes,
right? Yep. Maybe he just had a stout no policy for this. And that's just kind of like, when it was a thing, the mob boss was just like, no, you're not getting into that.
Right. And that's the thing is, as I understand it, he was very strongly opposed. And he was also very strongly opposed to prostitution. And the narcotics part, that I don't really know, you know, because I don't see the connection between the mafia and narcotics. But the prostitution part, I can see it. I can see the way that they used to deal with it and the way they dealt with it while he was the boss. And it was a much more distant. They were getting money but they weren't dealing with it directly.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the earlier years where they might actually run some of these houses, or they might actually be driving the women around. That did not happen later on. So yeah, it does seem like there may be some reflection on who's in charge of how things operate. But even in the, like I said, in the earlier years, I have no record of it either.
Yeah, and maybe it was just one of those things. The first mob boss laid that rule down in Milwaukee, and it just carried on. Because I'm assuming every mob boss after the first was somehow associated with the first, you know?
More or less.
So it was just kind of a running thing where that guy was opposed to it. So then the next mob boss was like, you know, kind of carried that over because he had learned that from the first mob boss or whatever.
It's totally reasonable.
So, interesting. So, are you ready for the second part?
Yeah.
Or do you... Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So the second part of it is, and ironically, maybe we should tell Wyatt that we did do a whole episode on this topic, did we not?
No. Well, ask the question. Wyatt knows this.
Okay. Can you explain grande cheese?
Yeah. So this is one of those questions. I mean, so Wyatt messaged me specifically about this, and I answered him directly in a shorter way than what we're doing here. But yeah, so he asked me the first part, and I gave him the short version of the discussion we just had. And then he hit me with the second part, and I was like, oh, why? You're very good. You're very good. And I was actually impressed because that did make me stop and think. For the people who didn't catch the Grande Cheese episode or don't remember the Grande Cheese episode, part of that story is that the guy who ran it early on was a guy named John DiBella. And John DiBella was close friends with Joe Bonanno, who's a mob boss in New York. And allegedly, they went to Sicily and they were part of this discussion about bringing heroin into the United States. Because heroin comes in, I mean, it comes from many different places, but one of the places it comes in is in through Europe and up through, I want to say Sardinia, but I don't feel like that's right. But it's one of the islands in the Mediterranean. So it's right by Sicily.
Okay.
So the Sicilians are like in a good place because that's where it gets processed. Okay. You say, Milwaukee wasn't involved in this. What about John DiBella? John DiBella is allegedly being involved in this importing heroin. And he's, you know, he's not Milwaukee, but he's right there in Fond du Lac. He knows all the Milwaukee guys. And yeah, and Wyatt asked me that. And I was like, you know, that's a really good point. It's a really good point. And I had to really think about that one. And I still maintain that I haven't seen a clear record of Milwaukee being involved. And I want to be very firm about that. But John DiBella does pose a problem. And there's a couple ways out of that. I mean, one, he was kind of working with Joe Bonanno. So this is more like importing into like New York and things like that. And John DiBella, as near as I can tell, even though he knew the Milwaukee guys, it wasn't like he really answered to the Milwaukee guys. Because Fond du Lac apparently is just far enough away where, you know, you're not getting regularly checked in by the Milwaukee mob being like, hey, what are you guys doing up here? So he was kind of, you know, you're not really part of that. And weirdly enough, later on, so John DiBella is like 40s, 1940s, 1950s. When the FBI finally comes around in the late 1950s, early 1960s, and they're kind of like creating an inventory of, okay, who are all the mob members? Who do we have to worry about? When they got to the Fond du Lac guys, they put the Fond du Lac guys underneath the Madison crew.
Really?
They didn't even put them in the Milwaukee crew. So even though Madison was primarily elderly guys who weren't really heavily involved in anything, there were a couple people involved in Grande. One's John DiBella, another was a guy named Al Caruso or AJ Caruso, and then there's a third guy whose name I won't say because he's still alive, and, and they put them under the Madison crew. And I wonder if that in any way influenced the way that they did business, because I don't know that much about Madison's point of view. Madison ultimately basically kind of got wrapped up into Milwaukee because they were all a bunch of old guys who retired. Mm-hmm. But before they retired, I don't know. I don't know if what their opinion was on all that because they weren't really as well documented. There isn't very much out there. The stuff that I know about Madison, I primarily know in the 1920s. Like I know the Prohibition years. But I don't really know much about the 40s and 50s. Yeah, I don't. So maybe they had a good run of heroin there. I don't know.
And because we had talked previously about how Madison had kind of gone legit at one point in time with all the real estate and stuff.
Right.
When was that at? Was that in the 40s, 50s time frame?
In my opinion, and again, like somebody could easily come along and be like, wait. No, you're forgetting this stuff. But in my opinion, a lot of the guys, even right after Prohibition, kind of went one way or the other.
There.
The more criminal guys went down to Rockford, and the more legit guys
just
stayed in Madison, invested in real estate, and lived out a quiet life. Were they involved in some stuff? Maybe. but they never really made headlines again like the way Milwaukee did.
And another question to go back to John DeBello.
Yeah,
do I have the name right?
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to try that hard. It's going to be John or Frank or, you know.
I was going between John and Joe. And
John or Joe, yeah. I mean, you guess five names, you'll get there.
So, but I don't remember the Grande Cheese episode well enough. But like you alluded to, he went to this meeting in Italy.
Yeah.
Where they were talking about trafficking heroin.
Yeah.
But is there anything that shows him in the U.S. associated with dealing heroin? Or is this the one connection to heroin that we know of?
That's the primary. A lot of this is like rumors and things like that. We know he went to this meeting. Like, we know it happened. And after the fact, the people at the meeting were indicted for this conspiracy. But by the time they indicted him, he had died. So he ended up getting out of it. Which, you know, if you're going to get out of an indictment, dying is a pretty efficient way of doing it. But yeah, then there were other rumors. There was another guy in Fond du Lac, not a mob guy, but another guy in Fond du Lac who ran a cheese business, who allegedly would get cheese in. And then I don't even remember the details, but somewhere in this, like, there was heroin hidden in the cheese packages. And there are other stories of heroin being connected to the cheese business. It does happen. There's stories in Pennsylvania, in New Jersey, where it happened. So it did work its way through there. That's verified. And then even much later, there were stories of it going through cheese and pizza restaurants, and even one in Wisconsin in Milton, which is by Janesville. And if people don't know where Janesville is like maybe 45 minutes south of Madison or something. And so, I mean, the stories of heroin going through Italian cheese and Italian pizzerias, like, they kept coming up again and again. So it's definitely not out of the question, but there was never anything concrete.
It was all just speculation.
There was speculation, and the closest they ever came was that meeting in Sicily, but he died. And because he died, he never went on trial where all this information would have come out.
And, I mean, this is pure, like, me speculating, but
sure,
just being him being at a meeting doesn't necessarily mean he was, you know, in that business. I mean, they might have invited him to that meeting because he was a cheese person and they wanted to bring him into this heroin thing, and then he said no.
Oh, okay.
Or something along those lines, right? I mean,
I guess that's possible. I was going to say, like, I'm pretty sure if you were in this meeting, you were part of this thing, because, like, they weren't going to talk about international heroin smuggling with anybody. But yes, you're right. They could have invited him and he could have said, no, I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you're absolutely right. That's certainly something that could have happened. I don't know.
You know, and like you said, didn't you say he went with a friend of his or something?
Well, he went with Joe Bonanno. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Joe Bonanno might have invited him knowing what they were going into. He might not have even had a clue. He just went because Joe DeBona, whatever, told him to.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's interesting. That's interesting.
Even though we know this meeting.
You're being a defense attorney right now.
Am I?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to do that. So
no, but I'm just saying, like, you'd be like, yeah, my client was in there, but he was, he said no.
Yeah, he didn't know.
You don't have any evidence that he would said yes. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very loose. Even knowing, like, it's concrete evidence that that meeting was about heroin. But there's so many, like, things that, and I just find it really suspicious that there's only rumors of him ever being
right
in the heroin business.
Right.
There's no concrete evidence. And I just feel like if you're a drug dealer, you eventually get caught.
Yeah. Well, so much of the Grande Cheese story is rumor. Like, there's so many things that, like, we know happened, but then there's so many more things that, like, they're always, like, suspected but never actually caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the mafia story in general. There's so many rumors, But you're making a really good point. You're making a really good point. So how about that, Wyatt?
Yeah.
How about that, Wyatt? Maybe John DeBella wasn't involved. He just was asked to. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like you said, he was in the Madison side and maybe Madison, but we also don't know that Madison was even connected to narcotics, right? I mean, there's no evidence that you know
there's
of.
There's no evidence that I know of. And with, even later, like I said, there was the place in Milton. And what that, like, that's a whole other story. But the guys who were involved in that, they were like first generation Sicilians. They were like guys who were born in Sicily, moved to the United States, and they set up pizza shops. So I don't even know
that they were associated with the Madison.
I don't know if anybody in Madison or anybody in Milwaukee or whatever even knew they were there.
That might have just been some like really tiny mafia cell out of Milton, Wisconsin.
Well, it wasn't strictly out of Milton. I mean, they were dealing with other places throughout the country. There was a whole network, but they were all these like first generation Sicilian guys. So how much, you know, the American Sicilian guys knew, I don't know. There's very little evidence they knew anything. Which is funny to say that the mafia doesn't know what the mafia is doing in their own state, but that's how it is. Like the American mafia and the Sicilian mafia are actually very distinct groups.
And I'm sure that there were just like microcells that nobody even knows about throughout the state of Wisconsin, you know, like we only know about, I mean, think about it. Nobody has ever really reported on the Milwaukee Mafia, and that's a pretty big city.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, there could have been a Kakana Mafia, and obviously nobody's going to report on it. Okay. It probably would have been two guys, but...
Yeah. No, but you're right. I mean, I'll take credit for that. I mean, I don't think that was your intent, but I'll take credit for that. Yeah. I mean, obviously there were newspaper reports and stuff like that, but yeah. You know, I did do a lot of groundbreaking here. and there probably is a lot more out there that somebody else has to come along and find. So yeah.
All right, well, have we beaten Wyatt's question to death, you think, or should we beat on it a little more?
Well, if you got more, but otherwise, I mean, I really liked his question, because when he told me the first part of the question, I was like, well, this is a simple answer. No, you know. but he really got me with the second. And it does make me more curious, because with anytime you're looking into the mafia, there's two things, and these are going to sound like contradictory, but there's always more going on than you think there is going on, because there's things that are just never going to get reported, never going to get caught. But contradictory to that, there's going to be less going on than you think is going on, because so much of the stuff that does come out is exaggerated you know, whatever else. So it's really weird. Like, you have to realize that some of the stories are exaggerated, whereas there's other stories that were never even caught.
Right.
So you're getting it from both ends, where it's like, the truth is somewhere in there.
Yeah, and I like the question, because first of all, it makes you think.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you that I'm on your side.
You're on my side.
Yes, because I don't think that at best, the Milwaukee Mafia's only connection to narcotics was that they were siphoning money in some way from it.
Okay.
I don't think they were ever.
Okay.
And I don't even believe that happened until I see a strong connection between a mafia member and somebody that was known as a narcotic dealer.
Wow.
Because I just don't see how that exists that you don't someday make that connection.
Right.
Because you're looking at enough of these people that I feel like at some point in time in some police file or something, they're going to make a connection to a narcotic dealer.
Right.
And if that doesn't exist, I just can't imagine that it was a thing.
Well, and like I was just saying, like, I mean, there's certain things that are never going to get known because they didn't get reported or they didn't get caught. But yes, I mean, we're going a little off task here, but like there's two ways of like writing and researching the mafia, and the one is like the very sensational way, and the other is the very dry, boring way. And I do the dry, boring way. And I mean, I'm sorry for people, but I do the dry, boring way. But I do, and so I can't be going up being like, here's all the rumors and the stories and this and this. You know, like, I mean, I might say it, but I'll be very clear that it's a rumor or a story. I have to have evidence. And so when you're relying strictly on the evidence, a lot of times it is very dry.
And you know what? Maybe that's why I need to have the evidence too. Maybe you've just taught me that.
Maybe.
Because I like to speculate left and right.
Yeah.
So maybe I need the real hardcore evidence. But I think with this one, it's the biggest part of to me is that narcotics is such a big thing.
Yeah.
That I just feel like there has to be something to show it. And if there isn't anything out there to show it, then it's probably not true.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, today, street gangs being about narcotics, like, yeah, duh. Everybody knows that. Motorcycle clubs dealing in narcotics. Yeah, it's pretty well known that they do. Like, you know, not everybody, but a lot of them do. But yeah, like, where's the evidence here? And I don't know.
I don't see it. And I just, it seems like something.
The fact that there's all these guys and not one of them has ever been caught. All the times they've been picked up and frisked and everything else, and they've never been caught. It's very weird to me.
Like, if you were to tell me a story that the mafia was siphoning money off of a restaurant in Milwaukee and there's no evidence to show it, that could happen. That's a small enough thing that there might not have ever been anything reported about it.
Yeah.
But narcotics is way too big for, in my eyes.
And that's the thing. There's not even a rumor of narcotics. Like, with the other, with the other thing, a lot of times what will happen is an informant will go to the FBI and they'll be like, this guy over here, he's getting shaken down for 50 bucks a week or, you know, 100 bucks a week, whatever it is. And then the FBI will go talk to that guy and he's like, oh, no, that's not happening. Well, the truth is somewhere in there. Either he is getting shaken down and he's denying it, or the informant is full of crap and he's not.
Right.
We don't even have that with the narcotics. We don't have the informant being like, this guy's dealing in narcotics. No one's even suggesting it.
Yeah. So it seems way too far out for me.
Yeah.
So I actually do have one more question.
Okay.
So, and I'm pretty sure that we did probably talked about this on the Grande Cheese episode, but I just don't remember.
Sure. Well, so if you don't remember, other people don't remember.
How closely was the Grande Cheese and the Milwaukee Mafia associated? Was it just known that John DiBella knew all these mafia members, or is there like a connection where they were doing, like, in some way, Milwaukee, the mafia was utilizing Grande Cheese to achieve something or to siphon money or something? Was there ever a connection like that, or was it just that he was associated with them?
There's an association. There's not really a strong, like, criminal link. There's a lot of things that are very unclear about this. Like, we know that they knew each other. You know, that John DiBella knew the guys in Milwaukee. There's evidence of, like, Steve DeSalvo, like, the number two guy in Milwaukee, being in Fond du Lac. You know, they knew Frank Balestrieri. So we know that he knew these guys. John DiBella had partial ownership in a nightclub with the daughter of a previous mob boss. So we know that he was somehow connected with them. So he's got more overlap than, you know, your average person would. So there's clearly a connection there, but there's no evidence that I can remember that I can think of. I don't believe that they were ever, like, laundering money through it or anything like that. So there's the link where I think John DiBella came out of this New York mafia background. He grew up and he grew up in Sicily, but he was originally from Brooklyn and then, you know, was very kind of mob connected there. And then he went out to Fond du Lac, of all places. And I think just because he had that mafia background, he got to know the mafia guys in Wisconsin. But I don't think there was really, like, a lot of deals going down or anything like that. I don't think I have really no evidence that he was actively involved in pretty much anything. I mean, anybody connected with that company when they were caught for something, it was like tax, things like that. You know, it wasn't anything really scary or violent or anything like that. So,
and I, maybe I
His early years were questionable. I mean, his earlier years, he was a big-time bootlegger, but really, who wasn't? So,
yeah. If I remember correctly, wasn't somebody with the mafia, though, helped him get that job up there? Up at Grande Cheese, or wasn't there a connection there?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much how the story goes. Is it was originally owned by a handful of guys in Chicago, and then the guys in Chicago started all getting murdered. There's some debate about whether it was connected to the cheese company or just a big coincidence that these guys were getting killed. But whatever the case may be, somewhere along the lines, they step in. And they say, okay, we're taking it out of here. We're going to move it to Fond du Lac. We're going to bring this New York guy in. And the details of this, you know, nobody knows the details. Like, there's no record of specifically what happened. But at some point in time, it was taken out of the hands of Chicago, given to the New York guy who moves out to Fond du Lac and runs it.
Okay. So even there, yes, he got his job from another person. But that person isn't even from Joe Bonanno. Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Okay, interesting. All right, well, I think we should probably wrap this one up, right?
I'm sure it's getting very long.
Yeah, it's a healthy Patreon. So.
Yeah, this has definitely got to be up there for Patreon.
Well, as usual, we like to thank everybody that is a Patreon member for supporting us. You help put the booze on the table for Gavin. And
yeah, I guess that's true.
And you also, in a way, help with my Coke Zero that I drink while Gavin drinks his booze.
What do you actually got today? Is it just a Coke Zero?
It is just a Coke Zero.
Oh, so yes. Sometimes you got some weird flavors mixed in.
Nope, not today. So, but we will be back next week with a new Milwaukee Mafia, and in 2 weeks with another Patreon. Again, thank you everybody for the support.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia Podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.